is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
G'day, welcome to Boarding Pass 94, operating on September 13th, 2021. This is Doug, and I'm here with my fellow industry insider, Drew. We're two av geeks creating a network for airline, airplane, airport, and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. Drew, by the time this episode airs, I should hopefully, knock on wood, have my 737 type rating, assuming that my last check ride goes well on Sunday.
Yeah, the past few days have been crazy, right? I mean, what was it you were telling me about? Oh, with the, we talked about the upset recoveries. Did you have any more other daredevil stunts in the 737 that you had to do?
No, well, for my evaluation, yeah, I had to, like we mentioned, I had to do a bunch of engine outwork. And then today I flew from the West Coast to Hawaii. And
we
Yeah, they sped it up a little bit, but I mean, it's a 5 hour flight normally. We flew probably a good 75% of it, I would say.
Yeah.
But we got a bunch of emergencies along the way, trying to figure out how to deal with it, things like that. So next time you're sipping your bubbly in the back,
right?
Cruising in first class over the Pacific Ocean, know that your pilots have done this flight in the sim. And they've had the entire book thrown at them about what could possibly go wrong and how to deal with it.
All right. So you're in a 737 over the Pacific, which is not a concern anymore. But for a lot of people, that would be, right? Flying such a small plane over the Pacific. Now, when you see that there might be a concern, are you immediately looking for a possible landing spot? Or
well,
is there one?
Okay. So that's the thing, Drew, is I'm coming from a DC-10, which has three engines. So we don't have to do ETOPS. ETOPS is only a two-engine airplane thing. So right. For me, it's like, hey, I lose an engine. Cool, I have two more in the DC-10. Yeah, I don't really think about it too much. But in this, there's so much more that goes into it about multiple different en route abort locations we can go to and things like that. And from the West Coast to Hawaii is one of the most remote stretches of ocean in the entire world, which people don't think.
Is there anything?
There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. No, and people don't realize that because 737s are flying this, but it's flying from the West Coast to Hawaii is more remote than flying from the West Coast to Japan or flying from the East Coast to Europe.
Okay.
Which you just don't think about that because from the East Coast to Europe, you're only over the ocean for about 3.5 to 4 hours. The West Coast to Hawaii, you're over the ocean for 5 hours.
5 hours. One of these airlines has a game called the Halfway to Hawaii game. Have you heard
of such a thing? I think we talked about it on one of our early episodes.
So your Halfway to Hawaii game isn't like fun. It's like, okay, at what point do we turn back or do we keep going? That's your Halfway to Hawaii game.
Yeah. So it's funny because we hit our in the DC-10 we called it the equal time point. In the 7-3 we call it the critical point. And today we hit the critical point and I was playing FO today and my sim partner is also an FO, but he was playing captain today and we hit a critical point. I look over and he just throws his hand forward and goes, Hawaii, we go. Like we're gone.
We go.
Equal time point. No matter what happens now, we're landing in the islands. It may not be Honolulu, our intended destination, but hey, we're landing in the islands, you know, luau tonight. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so here's my question. So maybe you're not halfway to Hawaii, right?
Mm-hmm.
But your destination is Hawaii. So
you're
less than halfway. All these people are going to Hawaii. The airline you fly for has maintenance in Hawaii. So say you are 3 hours away. Do you turn back or do you keep going?
Yeah, we turn back. Yeah. It depends on the situation, what it is we have. If we have like a pneumatic issue or something and the other pneumatic system is able to pressurize, then no, we're not going to turn around. But if we lose an engine or a fire or something like that, it's all, I think we've talked about this in the past where it's all based on time because the winds going to Hawaii are blowing west to east. So it's not about a distance over land or over the ocean. It's based on the time and get this. So the route today was from LA to Honolulu. We were actually, once we coasted out, once we were over the water, we were closer to San Francisco than we were to Los Angeles. When we got to our critical point, if we had an issue, we weren't going back to LA. We were going to San Francisco.
Oh, this was from LA to Honolulu.
We were flying from LA to Honolulu today. And if we had an issue, San Francisco, because if you look at a map, California bows out into the Pacific a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we went a little bit north before going south. So our critical point, if we had something wrong, like if we lost an engine, we turn around, we're going to San Francisco,
right?
Not to Los Angeles.
Well, I don't think people realize that when flights are going from the West Coast to Asia, even to Hawaii, they're skirting the West Coast, because all those routings that you send me flying over Sacramento, you would think those are going flying over the Pacific, but not quite. No. Not yet.
No, they don't go over the Pacific until north of us, north of San Fran. Some flights, I mean, like when I went to Hong Kong from LA, we flew up almost to Anchorage before heading over. Yeah.
Well, it's almost like with these wide bodies going to Asia, they actually have more opportunities for a landing spot than you flying to Honolulu.
Oh, they absolutely do. Yeah. So
isn't that crazy though?
Yeah. If I was on the triple going from San Fran or Los Angeles or Seattle or Phoenix or Denver or Houston, pick a hub. It doesn't matter. Going over the Pacific. Yeah, absolutely. Like you might only be over water for an hour or two, whereas going to Hawaii, 95% of your flight is over water, which is why it's one of the most remote stretches of ocean in the world. And 737s are doing this back and forth all day, every day.
Well, do we want to start our next little
we're not planning on talking about it this much. I think this is a really good lead in.
Well, let me set up your meme.
Okay.
Or no, do your meme first.
Okay.
Because that kind of
well, so in the script, I was saying, speaking of 737s, we have to discuss a couple of memes and videos that we found this week making fun of when this episode airs, hopefully the airplane that I'm typerated in. And just a backstory, the reason why we're not recording after my sim and after I get typerated, knock on wood.
Yeah.
What day is it right now? Wednesday, Thursday, Tuesday?
I feel like we just taped the last episode.
It was just a couple days ago, but this is our new normal. You know, we've been talking about the new normal for the last 12, 18 months. This is our new normal.
I mean, the good thing is we're never at a loss of material. If we had no stories, we'd have stuff to talk about.
Yeah. So. Yeah. All right. So you want to set up these memes or the videos, or you want me?
All right. Well, can I tell people what you sent me?
Yeah.
Hold on. Why don't you tell me? Cause I have to pull it up so I'm accurate.
Okay.
So
the video or the meme first?
You do the video. Okay. I'll talk about the memes.
we've talked about how the Airbus has the side stick and it's European and it's French and it's just very gentlemanly, I guess is the best way to put it.
It's very civilized.
Very civilized. And
it's Boeing very continental.
But Boeing airplanes are just pure grit and muscle and buttons and things like this. And I found this video this week, or someone sent it to me, and it said Boeing pilots versus Airbus pilots. And it started out with Boeing, and it was this crazy bus driver somewhere in Asia. It looked like probably Japan because they were driving on the right side and they had the white gloves on. They were going down this mountain pass and they were basically in this bus, like drifting down this mountain pass, just this crazy left, right on the steering wheel. And then it cuts to this bus driver who has a little stick shift next to his seat, and he's shifting with like two fingers. He shifts and then he lifts his hand up and just keeps it hovering, and then very quietly goes down and shifts again. So we'll try and post it on the show notes because it is absolutely hilarious. Drew, after I sent it to you, I watched it another probably five or six times, and I was in tears by the end of it.
I didn't quite get it, but then I saw him with the little shift thing.
He uses like three fingers and then just like holds his hand up and then three, like, and the meanwhile, the Boeing bus driver is like manhandling this bus.
All right. So the meme that you sent me, it starts off with Apollo 4, 1967, and it has all the dials and switches and, you know, what you'd expect to see in 1967. Space Shuttle 2002 has a few more dials, but it has some
screens,
TV screens. It's, it's not a completely glass cockpit. And then we have the Crew Dragon, which is completely, it's like a Tesla.
It's like just big, monitors. Giant touch screens. Yeah.
Yeah, touch screen. Then you have Boeing 737 panel 1968, which looks like, really looks like Apollo 4 1967, right? Mm-hmm. With all the dials and switches. And then you have Boeing 737 overhead panel 2020, exactly the same.
No changes.
From 1968. Is this for real?
Yes, it is.
Is this real?
Yeah.
That is so crazy. Now I'm going to, so this is 1968, Doug, right? I did some research as we do for this show.
Yeah.
The 737 is actually based, the fuselage and the aerodynamics, right, is based on the 707.
707.
Mm-hmm. 707. So the first flight of the 707 was 1957.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a 707 nose, it's basically a 737.
It's identical.
The cockpit, you could take the cockpit windows off a 707 at, where do we have one? I'm sure there's one in the museum. Oh, at the Smithsonian, mm-hmm, near Dulles Airport.
Yeah.
You could take those cockpit windows off. You could put it on a 737 MAX.
Same with the 727.
Same, yeah, with the 727. The 737 MAX 10, I like to call it a lowrider 757. It's actually very similar to a 707. It's 143 feet long. Mm-hmm. The 707 was 144 feet. So it's almost the same fuselage. You slap another two engines on it and you got a 70, jack it up just a little bit.
Yeah.
You got a 707. And the range isn't that different either. So you could, you know, if you're having a problem, if you want to film like a remake of Airport 1970,
just get a Max. 10.
Just use that. I'm serious.
That's too good. That's too good. All right. People are going to think I don't like this airplane. I love it, but you can have a little fun if you can't make fun of yourself.
I mean, I have grown to love it. I've worked with that plane my whole life when I, yeah, think about it, right? It is very lovable. And, you know, it's starting to look a little sexy with the winglets and, mm-hmm, the, you know, the new engines.
Yeah.
The tail looks like a 787 now.
Mm-hmm.
We really need a 797. I mean, we keep making excuses, but, you know, once it's decked out inside with these Maxes, if it's a narrow body, how much different is it going to be, Doug? Really?
Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's the same cross section as a 757.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great plane. I have my type ride check on Sunday, and hopefully when this episode airs, I'll be fully qualified and have 737 on my FAA license on the back of my certificate.
So you have an actual flight on Sunday?
No, it's my sim. Because remember, we get type rated in the sim. So
I'm
then
still having a hard time accepting that.
This is the crazy thing. When this episode airs, starting, mm-hmm, on Thursday of next week, I'm eligible for my first flight. I'll be on call for my first flight Thursday of next week.
You can fly people, but you haven't actually flown the plane.
Correct.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we talked about this when we taped in Newark and you were telling me about this and I couldn't believe it then. And it's still like shocking, but yeah, I'm sure it's safe. And I'm
the
sure
Sims, the Sims are that good. In fact, I'm already qualified to land the plane. My, mm-hmm, my check ride on Sunday, I got landing qualled.
We did talk about the landing, so we won't go back to that. But all right. So let's talk for a few minutes about an airline that does not operate the 737, Doug, because we're so 737 focused now. Let's step away a little bit. This airline doesn't operate any Boeing products for that matter. In fact, this airline's founder, who is on his fifth airline startup, hasn't ordered a Boeing product in over two decades when he was with WestJet. We talked about David Neeleman and his newest venture, Breeze, several months ago when they launched service. Doug, let's revisit this topic and see how they're doing.
Yeah, this is a really good story, Drew. According to an interview last week with Forbes, Neeleman, who's the airline's founder and CEO, claims that this nice, and I put it in quotes because that's what they call it, this nice, okay, airline, this nice airline is here to stay. Breeze just secured an additional $200 million in funding, which will allow the airline to improve the customer experience, grow the fleet, add more destinations and frequencies, and expand the war chest to withstand increased competition from other airlines. The new funding makes Breeze The new funding makes Breeze the best capitalized startup in the U.S. aviation history, surpassing one of Neeleman's other startups, JetBlue. Of the airline's first 39 routes, only 5% already had existing year-round service.
All right, we've been hearing a lot about how technology is supposed to be at the core of Breeze, but have often wondered aloud on the show what's that mean, right? They, mm-hmm, just keep saying nice and high. I'm still not seeing a lot of details. So Neeleman explained in the interview how Breeze is trying to separate itself from its competitors from a technology standpoint. He said, the best thing about starting a new brand is that you don't inherit all the old school technology that other airlines use. You start off with the latest and greatest. The airline doesn't have a toll-free number. Instead, it uses on-demand messaging. This helped Breeze respond to customer issues this summer in less than 20 minutes on the busiest days. Some U.S.-based airlines were dogged by call wait times upwards of 41 hours. The airline is set to receive new A220s early next year and plans to begin expanding the national footprint, including transcon service. When asked what he wants Breeze to be known for, Neeleman replied, niceness. that we offer a great price nonstop to where you're going with people who care about your experience. So is your motto going to be welcome to the nice guys? I mean, just yeah. saying you're going to be nice, is that's not enough. Tell me yeah. more.
Yeah, we really need to fly on them just to see what it's all about.
Do you know that I haven't even flown JetBlue?
I haven't either.
I'm thinking it'll be similar, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think we should fly JetBlue first because it was yeah. around first. So I think that when we branch out and do a fun trip like that, we should probably fly JetBlue. Maybe because, you know, we keep talking about doing our ultra low cost, the Spirit, Frontier, Allegiant mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. We should also do a trip where we do a JetBlue flight and a Breeze flight and maybe even throw a Velo in there in the same yeah. in the same trip, because that way it's kind of the same segment of the market, mm-hmm. if you will. But you know, when they launched back in, or when they announced the name and launched, and we talked about it, what, back in February, and they said they're going to be this technological airline. Yeah, we haven't really seen it, but the fact that they're saying that their average wait time was 20 minutes on the busiest days, and other airlines, their call times were 41 hours. Now, granted, when you have an airline carrying millions of people versus right. thousands of people, that has an impact. But I will tell you, I think it was when we were trying to do the inaugural, the JFK to, were we going to San Fran or LA?
We were going to
San Fran.
San Francisco,
was, yeah. right? Yeah, when we were trying to do the inaugural and it kept switching and I was trying to change my flight and I yeah. called the United hotline, the wait time was like 4 or 5 hours. And on the call, it said, uh-huh. why don't you hang up and try right. using either Twitter or Facebook or text.
Okay.
So I texted, I got a response back within like 4 minutes.
Okay.
So it's not just Breeze. Other airlines, and I've done this with Delta as well. I haven't tried it with American, but other airlines are going to this on demand, which mm-hmm. is actually really nice, because the last thing I want to do is sit on hold with some 1-800 number, like do the dishes and do the laundry and clean and mow the lawn. And then all of a sudden when I'm in the middle of that, it's like, hey, you're getting your call back. You can just respond at your leisure and have this conversation on text or Twitter, whatever it is. That's the way yeah. of the future.
Well, the other thing that they can do, Doug, is if it's a long wait, they should do, I know some companies do this, where they will call you back.
The call back.
Say, do you want us to call mm-hmm. you? And then I can just go about my day and they can call me when they finally get to it.
Yeah.
But I've been finding that the apps offer you so much. I really don't need an agent 90% mm-hmm. of the time, because it gives me so much flexibility and transparency. My flight's delayed, it offers me a host of different flights that I can take with no charge, you mm-hmm. know, because it's a weather delay or whatever. I'm excited to see. So I really don't. Do you know where this airline falls? I don't think he's marketing it as a low fare carrier. I'm not getting that feel to
it. No, they do have low fares, because I keep getting $39 one-way ticket emails from mm-hmm. them. I think that they're trying to market in that JetBlue segment, that hybrid type model.
Yeah.
I don't think they as far as I know, they don't have any sort of a premium product, even additional like extra legroom seats or anything. Yeah. But when they get their A220s, I know he has his eyes set on Europe. That's one of the places that he wants to go. And the 220, if they want to do it, has the legs to get there. And we see the JetBlue is doing that now with the A321XLR. So yeah, we'll see. Who knows where they're going to go.
I wonder if he still has an affiliation with JetBlue, because he could conceivably be competing with JetBlue if he's planning to do Transcon.
Yeah, I don't think he does. I think he's fully vested.
Divested.
Divested.
All right. Well, so people have a lot of confidence in him, you know, to be backed up by, what is it, $200 million.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that enough investors are this far in, they launched, what, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. They wouldn't throw money at a burning building. So whoever these investors are who are pumping the money in, obviously see something beneficial or something important about this airline. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, the one thing, so they're going to be their shtick is the point to point. But have you noticed the majors starting to get into that a little bit?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They see
yeah.
the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
So,
well, and there's a reason why he used the word war chest. If, uh-huh. if other airlines come at them, They're just trying to build up, because they're waiting for the big four, United, Delta, American, Southwest, yeah. to continue doing what they're doing, fly these offshoot routes mm-hmm. that are not hub to hub or right. hub to spoke. They're just random routes that they're trying to take competition from Breeze now.
I think you're going to start to see, you know, when the airlines started to launch their secondary hubs as kind of overflow hubs, mm-hmm. and they abandoned them, right? Cincinnati, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Memphis. You could see those airlines coming back because they probably have some infrastructure still there mm-hmm. that they could launch a point to point from like Cincinnati to Austin.
Yeah.
I could totally see that.
Do you want Breeze reminds me of a little bit? AirTran.
AirTran, okay.
Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, AirTran was this scrappy upstart that offered a cheap first class product and a nice coach product. And they were flying from right. places like the Quad Cities of Iowa and Illinois to Orlando, or mm-hmm. Peoria to Illinois to Orlando on a 717. Places that never typically saw nonstop service. And now these places have Allegiant flying those, but I feel like Breeze is a level above an Allegiant from like a quality standpoint. Yeah, yeah. It really does remind me of AirTran.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they're going in soon with state-of-the-art A220s,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a draw for business passengers in those smaller cities.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talk about Greg, for example, in Lexington.
Yeah.
It costs him so much money to fly anywhere. But if Breeze launches a flight from Lexington to New York or whatever, I could see him jumping on it, right? Nonstop, probably a good product.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, based on our discussion so far in the episode, making fun of the 737 and highlighting an airline entrepreneur that has avoided Boeing planes for over two decades might seem like we're ragging on Boeing. Drew, our first two news stories aren't exactly pro Boeing either. But listeners, we promise, we don't dislike Boeing. Anyone who's listened to us, even just a few episodes, can see that. We have a 747 as our logo, for Pete's sake. I fly a Boeing. We love the 787. We love the triple. We're really not ragging on Boeing. That said, Boeing has been in a rut and they continue to have issues. So what's going on this week?
All right. This is from the Wall Street Journal, Doug. Boeing's delivery of new 787 Dreamliners likely delayed until at least late October. That's crazy that there's no deliveries for a whole 2 months or whatever, right? The FAA rejected Boeing's recent inspection proposal, further delaying already backed up deliveries. Deliveries have been pushed for nearly a year after the FAA began looking into manufacturing defects. Boeing said it has more than 100 completed Dreamliners worth more than $25 billion that are awaiting certification and delivery. Where are they parking these?
Probably Moses Lake, Charleston. That's Moses crazy. Lake. Yeah.
Get Diecast Ryan or one of these Instagram hotshots out there. I mean, I would like to see that.
Yeah.
The manufacturer met with FAA in early August and presented a plan, but at least one Boeing engineer that represents the FAA for the purpose of inspections said he didn't support his company's assessment that an adequate fix to the problem was presented. A company spokesman says that the company is committed to working with full transparency with regulators. Boeing wants and expects our teammates to speak freely, ask questions, and present different perspectives about very complex and technical issues. The FAA says it won't sign off on inspections until its safety experts are satisfied. Several airlines, including American, are considering using the delay to leverage Boeing into cancellations of some outstanding orders. This all stems from quality control issues discovered last summer, where defects in some planes were identified, mainly tiny gaps where aircraft sections are joined together. You know, that's how you see a quality of a car too. Like if mm-hmm. the doors isn't aligned, you know, yeah. the line, mm-hmm. that's how you know if it's good quality. Because a BMW, you could take a ruler and old Chevrolets like back in the 70s, my dad would show me, it's like, look at this. A BMW would never look like this.
Yeah, you like know, half an inch apart.
Yeah. Now, having said that, American car companies the quality is so much better now.
Yeah. Yeah. After the financial crisis, when all the automakers got bailed out, they definitely improved their quality standards. But Drew, what's really crazy to me, and I think we've talked about this in the past, when it first happened last fall, these 787 issues, and this is the first time that we've revisited it really, is this was all after the MAX. And you would think that Boeing would learn its lesson. Right. Yeah. And it's like, but I feel bad for Boeing, but a little bit, yeah. it's like, just seems like they keep doing it to themselves. Why can they not figure this out? How to, they have a great product. Everyone Maybe not. I was going to say everyone loves flying on Boeing products. Maybe not all 737s.
Well, you still have,
but
if it ain't Boeing, I ain't going.
People. Yeah. Yeah. Boeing, the 78, we love the 78. Anyone who's flown on it loves the 78. Mm-hmm. Boeing is shooting themselves in the foot. They are 100% doing this to themselves.
I know we're being hard on Boeing, but all we're doing is holding Boeing accountable because we want them to do better. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was Qatar Airways where they got a 787 delivered and they found so many defects, they wouldn't accept it.
Yeah.
They wouldn't accept it. So I think they sent it back, had those problems fixed, and then they accepted it. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have things like that. And that guy, Al Baker. Yeah. I mean, he's a real stickler. So they have to meet his quality and Lufthansa quality, United. Everything that we expect for what $250?
$250 million. Yeah. Well, yeah, it shouldn't just be Al Baker with high standards. Everyone has high standards. You spend that money on an airplane, you expect that it's going to be a high quality product. And Boeing, like I said, I mean, even after the MAX, you would think that Boeing would figure this out. But there are 100+ airplanes that haven't been approved yet by the FAA to be delivered to these customers. And now,
right.
As we said, American might use the leverage to cancel some outstanding orders.
You know what I thought was interesting, Doug? Did you see this? So, but at least one Boeing engineer that represents the FAA for the purpose of inspection. So it's a Boeing employee, but he's working on behalf of the FAA. Mm-hmm. And that's because these planes are so advanced. Someone on the outside wouldn't understand it enough to certify it or enough to verify that it's working properly because it's so advanced.
That was part of the problem with the MAX, Drew, was that it was Boeing's engineers working for the FAA that said, yeah, these planes are good. And then we had the MAX issues. This is good though. The fact that a Boeing employee stood up and said, I don't agree with what my company is presenting here. No, and hopefully from like a whistleblower standpoint, there's no blowback or anything.
I don't think there will be. I think the public needs to trust Boeing again. And I think we're getting there and things like this will help. Mm-hmm. So you're flying the 737. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to go for a little tangent, but it is 787 related.
Okay.
You are going to go to the 777. You're going to jump to the 777 very soon. And just recently you saw that 787 spots were open. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts?
I've gone back and forth on that. I think I probably could get it if I wanted to. Drew, I'm gonna stick with the triple.
Yeah. What an opportunity though.
Yeah. And the way I look at it is the 78. I love the 78. I probably like the 78 more than the 777 for a couple of reasons. If I go to the 78, I will be spoiled for the rest of my career. I can never go to a better airplane.
Yeah.
Unless a 350 or something comes around, and even then, is it better? Same. Who knows? I want to go to the triple because it's probably going to be retired before the 78. And the triple is such a historic airplane already.
Right.
You know, the way we look at the 747, the triple isn't on that level yet.
No.
But in 10, 15, 20 years, as the 777 continues to get produced, the 777X comes out, et cetera, groundbreaking from a two-engine airplane standpoint. And, you know, historically, the 777 could be one of the most popular airplanes, mm-hmm. wide bodies ever built.
Yeah.
And to be able to say that I flew that, it's kind of like, yeah, I would love to fly the 757, you know, or the 747.
So you're going to be one of those guys who's on the wide body as a first officer for a long time, where everything is very organized. The plane solves your problems for you. You're on a lot of international trips where everything's, you know, everything's proactive and everyone's ready to go like 15 minutes prior. And you're going to go from that to the captain of a 737. And I've had, I won't mention which airline, but I've had a friend tell me when he's a 737 FO. And when he has these guys who are 777 FOs, now they're a 737 captain.
Yeah.
They'll be doing the checklist and he'll be looking at the guys like, let's go. Because everything's not as gradual and calm and collected. Right, as on a 777, because a 777 is a Rolls Royce. A 737 is, come on, you got to like, let's go. We got a lot of stuff to do to get out of here.
Yeah.
So, do you have anything else on the 787? No,
should we move on to the next Boeing article?
Oh, it's another bad one.
This also comes to the Wall Street Journal. It says, big Boeing customer says it's walking away from a new MAX order. Giant European low-cost carrier Ryanair said it ended talks with Boeing over a new order for the 737 MAX. Ryanair is leaving the table due to a dispute in pricing. The airline placed an order for 75 MAXs last summer and was in talks with Boeing to acquire the larger MAX 10. The airline said, last week it became clear that the pricing gap between the partners could not be closed, and accordingly, both sides have agreed to waste no more time in these negotiations. Despite not ordering the MAX 10, the airline still expects to grow its fleet to more than 600 planes as part of its expansion plans over the next 4 years. Boeing is still booked, and this is big, Drew. This is actually a positive for Boeing. Yeah. They've still grossed 630 orders through the end of July this year, compared to 243 gross orders in 2019 and 184 in 2020. So already 7 months into the year, they have more orders, gross orders, than 2019 and 2020 combined. That's a step in the right direction.
That's right. They're gonna be busy for a while. I just hope that they don't rest on their laurels and not start developing the 797 or whatever replaces the 737. But this is, all they fly at Ryanair are 737. So O'Neill is kind of tied to Boeing. So they have to work it out, and they will.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it be price or quality or performance, they'll find a solution, because he doesn't have another choice. He's not going to buy A320s, because that kind of ruins his model. It's like the Southwest model, one fleet type, saves you so much money.
Well, using your car example, that would be like if you're driving a BMW, let's call it a 2011, 2012, and you say, I want to get a new BMW, and you roll into the car dealership driving a BMW, and you try and negotiate with the dealership for a lower price, and they're like, well, you already drive a BMW. They're not going to give you a lower price and say, let us prove to you how we're a good company, right? Yeah. So if you show up at the BMW and you're Chevy and you're like, hey, I'm looking at a BMW, they might give you a lower price because they're saying, hey, we want you to come to us. We want you to be one of our partners or customers. This is where airlines like the big three in the US, like a lot of international airlines who fly both Airbus and Boeing and multiple fleet types, can play the two against each other and say, okay, well, if you're not going to give us a good deal for A321XLRs, we're going to go with the MAX 10. Whereas like Southwest, like Ryanair, like EasyJet, if all you operate is one airplane type, you're probably not going to get as good of a deal from the company as you would, even though you are this giant operator of that plane type.
Yeah, but that deal has to be, the benefit of that deal has to be enough to cover the added cost of the training, the parts, all that stuff. So it usually is, and then some, to draw them away to have more than one fleet type. But, the advantage of that is if a fleet is grounded for whatever reason, your airline isn't shut down.
Exactly.
You can still maintain some service.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm split on that. I personally think having two types is a good idea, because it keeps everyone constantly competing for your business.
Yeah, I agree. So I've got a question for you with this Ryanair versus Boeing thing. Boeing knows that Ryanair only operates 737s. Ryanair knows that Boeing knows they only operate 737s. So they both have this big breakup, right? They're in their corners, their long lost love, the one that got away, if you will. They're sitting on opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean, sitting in their corporate suites. But arms crossed, pouting. Who do you think is going to come back? Who do you think is going to come back to the other one first? Do you think Boeing is going to say, hey, you really need us? Or do you think Ryanair is going to say, hey, we really need you?
It's probably going to be Ryanair. But having said that, didn't EasyJet start with 737s?
They did, and they went fully to Airbus.
Yeah, so O'Neill could do something shocking like that, but it would cost him a lot of money.
Yeah, because they have almost 600 Boeings.
Yeah, and Airbus isn't suffering for orders, so it's not like he's going to get this awesome deal. We'll see what happens. No talk about the 737. Let's move on to another topic. This is from CNBC. American and Alaska will end pay protections for unvaccinated staff if they contract COVID. American and Alaska are the latest U.S.-based carriers to update their COVID policies for employees. Both airlines announced this week that unvaccinated employees who contract the virus or come into contact and are forced to quarantine will no longer be placed on paid leave. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. So they're sick, but they can't get sick pay. Instead, the missed work days will be subtracted from their sick time. So their sick time is taken away, but they're not getting sick pay.
Correct. Yeah. So,
right.
The way it works in the airlines, and Drew, mm-hmm. I'm new to this. Correct me if I'm wrong. If I use my sick days, I still get paid for it, yes. But it comes out of my sick bank. Right. Prior to this, during the pandemic, before vaccines were available, most airlines were saying, we're not going to charge you sick days if you have to take leave because of COVID.
Right. Yeah. But in this case, you can call in sick, but if it's due to COVID, they're not going to pay you sick time.
Yep.
An American memo said, going forward, given there isn't an FDA approved vaccine, pandemic leave will only be offered to team members who are fully vaccinated and who provide their vaccination card to us. The American policy begins on October 1st, and the Alaska policy began at the end of August. Alaska also launched a new program that will pay employees $200 if they provide proof of vaccination by October 15th. So that's a little perk to help push people to get the vaccine. As we speak, in the U.S., we're at 52% of people that are fully vaccinated. And apparently the rates of vaccination are going up.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. So all these little things help.
Yeah. This is one of those things like we talked about back in the middle of the pandemic from an airline standpoint, saying they're all taking different approaches. No one really knows what the right approach is until we get out the other side of this. And we still don't. We talked about United. We talked about Frontier, who said vaccinations are mandatory. Other airlines in the world are mandating them. Some are, some aren't. And what's the right answer? What's the wrong answer? Do you incentivize people? Do you punish people?
Right.
I don't know, Drew. I'd like to say there's an easy yes or no, but I don't think there is. And so American and Alaska, for whatever reason, have decided they're not going to force people to do it. But just like Delta said, we're going to charge you $200 a month if you don't have the vaccine. There are disincentives to people who choose not to get it.
I think if I'm an airline executive and this vaccine is proven to work and it's keeping people out of the hospitals, you know, we work in an industry where we make contact every day mm-hmm. with thousands of people.
Thousands.
So it's about our safety, and it's also about our customers' safety. It's about our coworkers' safety. I mean, for someone to say, well, it's my right, this is one of those things like you don't want the TSA to search you. It's your right, but you can't fly.
You can't fly. Yep.
So it's one of those things. And, you know, it's like the seatbelt. My dad didn't want to wear a seatbelt in the 70s when that rule, because it was his freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But people, you know, people get used to it and it becomes a norm. And now we probably feel naked without that seatbelt across mm-hmm. us, right? We can't step off the gas. We were doing so well. And now isn't the U.S. now back on the list of countries that are a risk because our infections are going up?
It is, but I actually just read today that hospitalizations nationwide and cases nationwide have plateaued, and they're actually starting to go down. Some states the rates are going back up, but no, the peak was not, if hopefully we're at the peak and this mm-hmm. downward trend mm-hmm. continues, it was nowhere close to what it was last fall. So that just goes to show that you've got this Delta variant, which is supposedly however many more times transmissible than the one that we had last fall.
Yeah.
And the relatively high vaccination rate that we have was able to keep it somewhat in check.
Right.
I think that's a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, the hospitals aren't overflowing in most of the country like they were.
Yeah. Certain areas they are, but not everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. And the other thing, and this is like, I don't want to be morbid, but the people that don't get vaccinated, if they survive, they've built immunity. So we are building immunity on two fronts, naturally mm-hmm. and with the vaccine. But don't roll the dice with that.
Yeah.
Especially if you're older or you're ill, get vaccinated, because you don't want to roll the dice with that and have to be hospitalized and not recover.
Yeah. Let's take a quick tangent, just looking mm-hmm. back on last year when COVID first started. Think back to March, April, May, how terrible aviation was, right? It went down to less than 100,000 TSA screenings a day.
Yeah.
Drew, we currently are, our 7-day rolling average is almost double the positive cases as what it was last summer.
Okay.
And TSA numbers are between 1.5 million and 2 million people. Like 20 times more than what it was when the virus first started. So that goes to show that, yes, there still are people out there who don't want to travel, don't want to get out.
Yeah.
But we, and I hate to say the new normal, we've talked about this a lot. I think people are finally getting used to that level of risk, and they're not going to just sit back in their room and, or at their house and say, I'm not going out. I don't know what's going to happen. So I think for our industry, yes, there, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, there are a few impacts on bookings and travel and whatever, but for the most part, people understand the risk and they're still getting out and traveling.
Yeah. Doug, I can't tell you, I cannot wait for the day where people don't wear masks on planes and you can really have an interaction with your fellow passengers, with the flight attendants. I really miss that part. So we'll see how long it takes.
I thought that the other day, and you're going to laugh when I tell you this, when I went into the lavatory and I smelled that jet scent, right?
Jet scent.
Yeah. You know, it's weird.
777.
It's weird. I'm saying I went into the lab and I was like, man, I really miss flying. But it's one of those things where like that standardized smell in the clubs and on the airplane and at the airport,
right?
You really miss that. Or you take your mask down to take a sip of your beer or coffee or whatever it is. And you just smell the smells of flying, you know,
right,
like you don't realize, like
when
I didn't realize I missed it until it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Well, no, I mean, you know, when they start cooking dinner, right. Yep. You can smell it wafting through the cabinets and then you start getting hungry or excited. It's like, oh, we're getting a nice meal. Unfortunately, I think people are going to be wearing masks on planes for years. I really think, because, you know, Asian travelers,
they've been doing COVID, it for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, all of them didn't wear it, but a lot of them still wore it. And we used to think they were weird. Like, why are you wearing a mask? We'll see. One of these days it'll come back to normal. So we'll just prod through it, you know, and wipe down our surfaces and wear masks. Because, like, Doug, you and I have literally been all around the world during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And knock on wood, I haven't been infected, neither have you. So you can do it. You can do it safely, right? You can live safely if we could do it. You know, a normal person that travels maybe two or three times a year, don't be afraid. Just use precautions and make that trip.
All right. Well, September is here. Kids are back in school. Trees are changing colors. Pumpkin spice lattes are back at Starbucks. If that's what you're into, my wife is. I'm so on it. That also means that summer travel season is officially over. Drew, let's do a quick recap of the summer and look ahead to this fall and beyond for what might be next for the industry as it continues its pandemic recovery.
All right. We can't leave that without talking about this pumpkin spice nonsense. I'm so tired of it. I know I like pumpkin spice, but just the fact that, you know, that's just the standard canned flavor, you know, in the middle of September.
It's the flavor of the season.
Yeah. Okay. But Starbucks is like ratcheting it up. So instead of pumpkin spice, well, they have that. They also have apple crisp latte or something. Apple cinnamon latte or something like that. So, yeah. I mean, be a little bit more creative. Pumpkin spice. Come on now. All right, the listeners know how hard we've been running it this summer, but we're not going to dwell on that. Instead, Doug, let's go back to last year. I believe it was sometime during the summer, American Airlines made a surprise prediction that they hope to fly 75% of their 2019 schedule in summer 2021. Then the U.S. entered a new virus wave that lasted almost through the fall and winter, and the outlook took a negative turn. Until cases began to unexpectedly fall throughout most of the spring and into the summer. As we've talked about, people began flying again in large numbers, setting daily COVID era records throughout the summer. Doug, I know you're a numbers guy. Was American right in their prediction?
Yes and no. Drew, we won't know the revenue standpoint until the airlines report their financials in mid-October, but we do have the TSA data. And this is from the TSA throughput numbers, which I know we covered frequently over the winter and last fall, winter and spring. We haven't talked about it for a while. So between Memorial Day and Labor Day, which for the non-US listeners, that's the last weekend in May and the first weekend in September, which is the summer travel season, 195.2 million passengers were screened this summer. That compares to 252.8 million in 2019. In fact, a handful of days this summer saw more screenings on the same day than in 2019. Overall, Here's the final number, Drew. Overall, mm-hmm. the screenings this summer were 77.2% that of 2019. So American was right.
They were right. And when they made that prediction, we agreed. Do you remember
that? We did. And most of the people in the industry said they poo-pooed on American. They said that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Cause we were in like this, you know, trough of mm-hmm. depression, and it's never going to come back.
Yeah.
But Doug, you know, you were talking about revenue. I don't think that they were talking about revenue. I think they were talking about volume, 75% volume.
Correct. So yeah,
they actually underestimated if it was a 77.2.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, good on American for thinking positive. All right, Doug, looking forward, let's unpack what might be in store between now and next summer's travel season. Big picture, outside of three-day holiday weekends and travel related to Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, we need to prepare ourselves for a trough in flights, screenings, and bookings, though nothing like we saw last fall.
There's an interesting story in Forbes written by the former CEO of Spirit, Ben Baldanza, this week, titled "Why Fall Airline Business Travel Won't Mimic the Busy Leisure Summer." He hit all the key points we've mentioned previously, that families won't be traveling, business travel still is depressed, the Delta variant slows bookings, et cetera. This is a big deal for airlines because business travel is such an important part of their revenue. Despite solid bookings this summer, much of it was discounted leisure fares just to get people traveling again. Drew, we know that we're in for a lull over the next several months. Delta variant aside, it's that seasonality of the travel. We would see this anyways. Let's try and make some next trip predictions like we followed along with American last year.
Right.
And predict what we think is going to happen in the year to come.
Yeah. So I think this fall we're going to have load factors in the 60 to 70. It's not the end of the world. I mean, it's low, but we expect the fall to be a little bit lower. We're going to come back like crazy over this spring break. Just watch. Because I'm hearing enough. I'm not a biologist and I'm not a scientist, but I'm hearing little things like in Texas, which has been hit hard with infections, they're actually turning the corner and the infections are going down. So the writing's on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to be in for a very strong spring break and summer. Until then, it's going to be less than 2019 for sure, but it's not going to be a panic situation for the airlines. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that Thanksgiving is not going to quite touch 2019, but I think it's going to be pretty close to 2019 numbers. And I think a lot of airlines, Delta, American, Southwest, United, they're all hiring now. They're all starting to spin pilots up because they want us. I happen to be in a training program getting ready to hit the line as early as possibly next week. They want us to be ready for this busy holiday season. But more than anything, they're looking ahead to next spring and next summer, and they want all of these new pilots. The airline I work for wants to hire upwards of 2,000 pilots between now and next summer, and other airlines have announced somewhat of the same numbers. I think, Drew, that this is my big next trip prediction. I think summer 2022 is going to beat summer 2019.
Yeah,
from a passenger standpoint, maybe not revenue, but from a passenger standpoint.
And I think IATA was saying it won't come back till 2024, if I remember correctly. So we may be back in 2022. I think definitely by 2023, we're going to be above 2019. We think positively, but we're also pragmatic. And we called it correctly with American at 75%. So
yeah, I'm trying to pull up this because I sent you an Airlines for America data point. Here it is. Okay, so this was put up by Airlines for America, which is a trade group that represents all the U.S. airlines.
Yeah.
This is in the most recent week, U.S. airline passenger volumes were 20% below pre-pandemic levels. Drew, in the last week, we talked about the average of the summer. Already in the last week, we're at 80% of pre-pandemic levels. Domestic air travel was down 17%. International air travel was down 43%. Once international comes back, we're going to see the total number really start to jump pretty high. Mexico is still over 100%. Drew. Mexico is almost at 120% of the same week in 2019.
Oh, because that's the place where we can go.
That's where we can go. Domestic Latin America is close to 90%. Atlantic traffic is at about 40%. It's really it's Latin America and the Pacific where we're struggling. And then some in the Atlantic. I don't know. I think 9 months from now, we could easily be looking back and saying, what pandemic downturn?
Right. You know, the missing piece of this huge puzzle is Asia and Australia and New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
There's hardly any traffic. And if what traffic there is for you and I to go to Singapore,
the hoops we have to jump through,
the quarantines, mm-hmm. it's prohibitive. I mean, I wouldn't even look at going to Asia right now. Today, I told you I was dodging DC traffic, you know, to get. So my mom is renewing her Sri Lankan passport, and it is going to take 3 months for her to get it back.
Mm-hmm.
That is how inefficient and how difficult it is if you're planning an international trip. And not to mention in Sri Lanka, I think the crisis is getting worse. And it used to be a 1-day quarantine and maybe back to a 14-day quarantine. So they're not out of the woods for mm-hmm. several months. So we'll see. That's the missing piece of the puzzle. Europe is, I don't want to say stable, but it's humming along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're adding flights. The airline I work for is going to be adding Amsterdam again, which is cool. So we'll have most of our European network back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not the smaller cities, but the major hubs like Amsterdam, Paris, London. Those are all back, which is a good sign.
Yeah. You guys heard it here. Drew and Doug, we're predicting summer 2022 will be back with a vengeance, possibly ahead of where summer 2019 was.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Well, we're recording early this week, Drew. We talked about that because mm-hmm. of scheduling constraints. And speaking of scheduling constraints, public service announcement, next week's episode might be a day or two delayed in both recording and the subsequent release. Why is that, Drew?
Well, I'm going to this Dorkfest.
Yeah.
Not going to be a lot of fanfare. So Doug won't be there because you're deep in training and, you know, that's your singular focus, which is good. But I will be there with Tyler Crook on Twitter, great photographer, and in the air with Nate. He does a YouTube channel. So we'll be there and our friend Greg will be with us. So we'll have a good time. No big events planned. But for those of you that might come out, so the main event for the Dorkfest, this is this airplane spotter thing that they've been having every year. They have it last year because of COVID. It'll be Saturday, September 18th from 11 to 1 p.m. at the park across from the In-N-Out Burger. I'll plan to be there. Doug won't be there, but I'll be wearing you can't miss me. I'll have my next trip t-shirt on. So I would love to meet you guys. Bright orange. Yeah, you cannot miss it.
Yep.
Yeah, join us for airplanes and burgers that day. I do want to do a real circle back.
Okay.
Because we talked about the airports that were not even close to their namesakes.
Yes, I know where you're going with this.
So do you want to talk about what Greg, because we had another email from
Email, and I completely missed it. As you remember, I was scrolling through all the screenshots, and we totally missed Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport, which is in Covington, Kentucky. It's not even
right. It's not even in the same state.
It's not even in the same state as Cincinnati. But they tagged, so that I will give them credit. They don't just call it Cincinnati International Airport. They tagged Northern Kentucky onto the back end of the airport name.
Yeah, I was always confused why, you know, I consider Kentucky the South. So when Greg would talk about going to Cincinnati for a flight, I'm like, what? That must be like 10 hours. But in the neighborhood, it's not too far.
What's the airport code? For CVG? Cincinnati. For what?
Covington, I guess.
Covington,
I guess
Kentucky. CVG, Covington, Kentucky.
And then we got an email from David Gerardo in North Carolina. He said, my home airport, Raleigh-Durham, RDU, is also an airport not in either of its namesake cities. It's located in Morrisville, which is 14 miles east of Durham and 14 miles west of Raleigh.
Huh.
Neither is it. Yeah. And it's not a mythical city like SeaTac that they out
of the blue. The unicorn.
It's not this mythical city of Raleigh-Durham, as some people like to believe. Also, I was wondering if you had anything planned for listeners at Dorkfest. It's like, no, David, hopefully I'll see you on that mound of grass and then we can share a burger. You know, we can share burgers together.
Yeah, wow. Raleigh, I didn't even think to look at Raleigh.
Yeah,
for whatever reason, I always thought that it was closer to Raleigh than it was to Durham. I knew that it was like Minneapolis, St. Paul that split two cities, but I was just there what 4 months ago, 5 months ago, something, and I didn't even realize that. So I apologize to our listeners for forgetting that. So if anyone else has other airports, this is awesome. My mom brought up Narita.
Right.
Because she listened so this far week. Away. And I said, well, you know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, so we didn't want to dwell on that. But
well, I wanted to mention Tokyo Narita because it's like a 45 minute or an hour, you know, train.
Yeah, it's ride. Like out in the rice paddies.
Yeah, but Doug, they mentioned Narita. So there's no false advertising.
That's true.
It's Tokyo yeah, area, but you're going to Narita.
Narita. Yeah.
You know, like London Heathrow, which the city that was raised for the runways. The still, there's some, you know, respect for that. Of course, we out, Doug and I always take this to the next level, to the point where people are like, cut it out. So now when Doug is going from Denver to San Francisco, he's like, oh, so you're going from Aurora to Burlingame this weekend?
Well,
Rosemont to Chantilly.
Speaking of that, I know the next segment, we're going to talk about my next flights. I am going from Aurora to a city in California. Sacramento uh-huh. Airport is in Sacramento.
Is it really in Sacramento or is it gerrymander?
Nope, it's really in Sacramento.
Huh.
Yeah.
Because it seems like
it's far out of town, but it is Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. Okay. SAC, as you say. Now, where is SAC, SAC? Because that is another airport.
SAC is on the south. It's southwest of downtown. Mm-hmm. Is it in? I'm going to look this up. That's a great question.
SAC is
Sacramento Executive Airport.
Yeah.
I want to say it's in Sacramento proper, but mm-hmm. I'm looking this up right now.
Somehow it seems like it's closer because I see the signs.
It is closer.
But then having said, well, this is what's really confusing. So Doug calls Sacramento SMF SAC 2. So it's really confusing.
Yeah. Sacramento Executive Airport is in Sacramento proper.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Now that we got that squared away.
Yeah. That's legit. Yeah.
All right. Have we beat that thing?
I think we have. All right. Well, to our listeners, this podcast is your show. So go on our website, nexttripnetwork.com. Let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram at Next Trip Podcast. Tell your friends about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel. Drew and everyone who's going to Dorkfest have so much fun. I'm really disappointed that I can't go. I've been the last 2 years. Hopefully next year I can make it, but with my schedule, I'm going to be on call next weekend. I just can't get away.
Well, if you see an LAX trip, you got to jump on it. How cool!
I wish I could. It's going to be the trips where they assigned me because I have to fly with a line check airman for my first trip. So I'll literally be sitting at home checking my phone every 15 minutes for days, waiting for the scheduler to call and say, get your uniform, get to the airport. We've got a trip. Go. Yeah.
I'm sorry about my squeaky voice today. I'm sitting here drinking peppermint tea because I have a cold, but so far, Doug, you know, the airlines, you know, they pride themselves on their completion factor at 99.5%. Our completion factor is 100%. Right. Yeah. And I constantly tell employees, I have not called in sick since 2005, right? And that's when I was in the hospital for a lung issue. But to be honest, if that happened again, I would still do the podcast. Because it's like, what would I do to keep myself occupied? The episodes would probably be longer where, you know, the listeners would be like, all right, we got a 2-hour episode. Go do something
else. Get up and walk around.
Right, walk around. All right. Thanks to all of our listeners for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.
Tears, but by the end of it. You're on mute. You're on mute.
Sorry, buddy was barking.
So. Yeah.
So the first time.